Election season is heating up here in Idaho. A gubernatorial debate between the three leading Republican candidates. Two more big debates coming up in the next 3 days, plus other issues that are making headlines across the state this week. It is time for our Friday Reporter Roundtable. I would like to welcome Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News, Kimberly Crusey with the Associated Press of Idaho, and Bill Manny, Idaho Statesman Community Engagement Editor. Thank you all for coming in today.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to get right into it. Let's talk about the gubernatorial debate, some of the issues that came up. And one issue, Kevin, that we weren't able to focus on Monday was education, mm-hmm. pre-K in particular. Can you get us up to date on what happened with that debate, part of that debate?
Well, the three candidates, none really came out in support of any kind of big initiative on pre-K. In fact, for all of the sniping between Tommy Ahlquist and Raul Labrador on Monday night, and there was a lot of it, the two came out and gave quotes that were virtually interchangeable on pre-K, both saying, I don't think we're spending K-12 money efficiently enough, so why would we add another layer of education? Why would we go down the road of doing pre-K? Only Brad Little opened the door, and he only opened the door a crack, and this is something he has talked about before, the idea of maybe putting together some sort of a grant program for schools to pursue any number of methods to get kids reading at grade level, to help K-3 students read at grade level. And he's envisioning the idea that schools could expand kindergarten, go to all-day kindergarten, they could hire reading coaches, they could hire more teachers to reduce class sizes, or they could do optional pre-K. So that's about the only sliver of support on pre-K that we heard Monday night.
What about this, as you said, the tensions between Labrador and Ahlquist? I mean, should we go as far as to say they're kind of in a big bickering match going on between the two of them? And this wasn't the first time we saw it at the debate, but how did that affect the tone and the mood of the debate? Maybe, Kimberly, you can talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, so all three candidates were asked what was the biggest lie said about them, and it really kind of kicked open the door where they have some thoughts on this.
That's what made that interesting.
But there's been no doubt that this campaign here this year for has seen some of the probably just the negative ads that are currently on TV, the negative mailers that are being mm-hmm. thrown around. You saw that is kind of, you know, we're 3 weeks out. You kind of saw that, on stage. It's not just between Tommy Ahlquist and Raul Labrador, who clearly have sniped at one each other. Brad Little has also stepped up his negative attack ads as well, particularly going after Tommy Ahlquist, going after his Democratic background, or well,
just, I saw an ad just this week
saying trying to make him out as a Democrat,
right?
Whereas Tommy has been trying to make him just as conservative as Raul Labrador. So it's definitely, I think, amping up. Now, I'm trying to think about anything in particular. There was a blog post mentioned during the debate where accusations of racist imagery being used that again just escalates it. But Raul Labrador was quick to say, "Hey, that was a blog. That was did not come from my ad, and I asked them to take down that image, and they did." So,
and it was fun. It was funny and interesting to watch Monday night because you had Brad Little standing in between Ahlquist and Labrador. He's kind of like the he's kind of like the kid that you put in the center seat in the back of the car so that the other two can't
get at each other.
Right. So they can't touch each other. I'm not touching you. And I don't know how that played because Little, I thought, was pretty measured and pretty much outside of that fray. I don't know how that plays. I don't know if people look at that and say, well, mm-hmm. He looked like the most gubernatorial of the three because he wasn't sniping at the other two. Or maybe they look at it and say, well, really wasn't engaged in the fight as much.
So, Bill, what do you say about that?
I mean, it's kind of sad when we are when we're kind of grading a candidate down because he didn't snipe enough in the forum and that he wasn't high energy enough. But that's a hit on Brad Little, right? He's just not the best speaker, the most dynamic candidate. I think what's interesting about where we are as a whole is everybody kind of expected Brad Little to be kind of the avuncular uncle, which the lovable uncle. everybody expected Raul Labrador to be kind of the prickly, tough guy that he is. I mean, he was a burr in the side of the governor when he's in the legislature. He was more than a burr in the side of the speaker in the House. I think what's been interesting is that Tommy Ahlquist has come out to be such a tough, sometimes mean candidate. I mean, I think one would have assumed he was going to be the nice guy candidate. And so I think what's interesting is to see how these personalities have developed in ways we may not have expected.
And Kimberly, we just have a – I can't remember in recent memory having an election that was this contentious between candidates here in Idaho.
You know, I've only been in Idaho a couple – 7 years or so myself. So I haven't – this is only my – a couple of gubernatorial campaigns under my belt.
But just elections in general?
No. And the money that is being thrown around is unprecedented. I think it was Betsy Russell, the spokesman review, who had mentioned that $4 million have already been spent on TV ads. Who knows how much are going to be spent over the final 3 weeks. When you have open seats, everything is elevated. And when you have three really tough competitive candidates, everything's just on heightened alert.
Right. I think the only recent campaign that I would put on this plane was probably 2010 with Raul Labrador and Walt Minnick.
That got really nasty
on the immigration issue. You were in the middle of Obama's first term. It was sort of this referendum on Obama and on Obamacare. But this one feels a little bit more personal. And you've got the three parties sort of jockeying at each other. And I think this one's a little bit nastier, but not by much.
We're speaking with Associated Press reporter Kimberly Crusi, Idaho Education News reporter Kevin Richard, and Idaho Statesman Community Engagement Editor Bill Manny. Do you have questions for our panel? Anything you would like to ask them about the election season? If you do, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at idahomatters@boisestate.edu, tweet at us at KBSX915, hashtag Idaho Matters, or go onto our Facebook page, Boise State Public Radio. We will try to get to your questions in the next segment if we can. Let's turn and talk about some upcoming debates. We have one coming up tonight. And Kevin, this was, we weren't sure if certain candidates were going to show up.
Well, this is the one debate that we're going to see this season between incumbent State Superintendent Sherry Ibarra and her Republican challenger, Jeff Dillon, the superintendent out of Wilder. And it comes at a point in this – this has been a weird election. I've said that over and over really since May when Jeff Dillon filed his first paperwork indicating that he was going to take on Ibarra. Since then, we haven't heard much from Dillon. There's been no fundraising in this race to speak of for either candidate. So you've seen no advertising. You hardly even see yard signs for either of these two. And time after time after time, I've been kind of waiting to see, is this the issue that Jeff Dillon takes on Sherry Ibarra? You know, we had the Dan Goikuchea scandal last summer, a really questionable hire and a short-lived hire. We've had Ibarra put out a budget that was partially approved, partially not approved. Her rural school bill failed spectacularly on the House floor. A mastery education program that is being piloted in Dillon's own district did not get expanded by the legislature. So numerous opportunities for Dillon to try to carve out a niche, to differentiate himself, to put out a press release even, to put out a social media post. He's been very quiet. So it almost comes down to this is his one chance to make a case to voters to differentiate himself from the other. And it's on a Friday night in late April.
Right.
So it's not going to be that widely viewed.
I was going to say, is it worth someone tuning in to watch?
Oh, sure. If you're undecided and you're voting in that primary, or if you're wondering about the job of the superintendent, even if you're not undecided and you're thinking about voting for this race in November, yeah, I think it's worth watching, but I'm a debate junkie, so I'm a little bit of a biased
source. So I'm asking the wrong person. Okay, then we have a debate coming up on Sunday.
Yes, we have the first congressional district. I believe five candidates are going to be involved in that debate. Mm-hmm. It's a GOP-Republican debate. So Michael Snyder, Russ Fulcher, Dave Leroy, Christy Perry, and Luke Malik will all be there. This race has, I would say it's the second most interesting race just because it's wide open. Now that Raul Labrador is running for governor, you saw a rush of candidates. The five that I just listed are not all five. There's more candidates than that running. And So, and it's kind of a grab bag about who might win. it all depends on turnout.
It's a crazy field. Kimmy and I both attended the KBOI debate out at Mountain View High School, mm-hmm. I think. And it was – you had these four guys and a gal on stage, and you had Michael Snyder just walking up and down that stage and kind of taking on those candidates one at a time, pointing his finger at them. I mean, it was certainly dramatic. It was dramatic. It was high energy. I'm not sure how illuminating it was, but it was a really interesting dynamic between those five candidates. And I think Kimmy's right. In such a crowded field, it's anybody's race.
Mm-hmm. I go back to 2006. This was the Republican primary where Bill Sally got the nomination for Congress. He got that nomination with fewer than 19,000 votes across a congressional district that stretches from Owyhee County to Canada. I mean, that gives you an indication. It does not take that many votes across this broad expanse of a congressional district to get the nomination. So probably all five candidates that Kimmy mentioned are probably looking at it and saying, I could probably scrape together 20,000 supporters. Yeah.
And what makes this race so it's not contentious necessarily at this point, but so wide open? Is it because so many people have thrown their hats in the ring? And I mean, your guess is as good as mine on who's going to get that nomination on May 15th.
Well, it's an open seat, so that always kind of creates an interesting dynamic. And and as different as these candidates try to seem, their answers were awfully similar. And so if there's not that much daylight between the candidates on the issues, what else do they have? It's personality. It's style. It's, you know, Christy Perry more than once, you know, said, I'm the girl with the gun, the girl with the gun. I mean, she's really trying to identify herself as unlike any of the other four guys in that race.
This will also be an interesting litmus test maybe to see the power of the Trump brand in Idaho politics in 2018, because Michael Snyder is an unabashed Trump fan. I mean, he has said repeatedly, if you elect me to Congress, I'll be Donald Trump's best friend in Congress. We'll see how the brand holds up, because you're seeing this in other races. I mean,
someone who didn't vote for Donald Trump.
Well, there's that. Every one of those candidates on that debate was trying to be the best friend of Donald Trump. Yeah. Though that's if you're a Donald Trump supporter, that's not necessarily what's going to persuade you, I don't think.
We are continuing our conversation with our reporter roundtable of regional journalists. Joining us in studio, our AP reporter for the Boise Bureau, Kimberly Crusi, Idaho Education News reporter Kevin Richard, and Idaho Statesman Community Engagement Editor Bill Manny. Want to talk a little bit about the Idaho Medical Association coming out and endorsing Brad Little. What makes this an interesting endorsement, Kimberly?
Well, the IMA came out in support of Brad Little over his opponent, Tommy Ahlquist, who is a former longtime emergency room doctor and who's now a Boise developer. But the IMA chose someone who is a rancher with zero medical experience other than dealing with policy, and rather than someone who's been literally in the trenches and knows how, you know, hospitals work. So the Little's campaign is calling this a monumental endorsement. The voters can decide
I see Bill laughing over here.
Tommy Ahlquist has responded to this and basically calling it a special interest group is yet again endorsing the establishment candidate. Mm-hmm. So he's playing up this as part of his political outsider image. And, it's just saying this is not a big deal. If you are a Brad Little fan, I think you are already loving this. And if you're a Tommy Ahlquist supporter, this isn't going to be the huge game changer.
I suppose it has a little bit of the man bites dog aspect to it. But if you think about just the past session, you know, Little was supporting Governor Otter in the dual waiver program that would expand access to the very care that these doctors want to see. He's also been active on these other health care issues, whereas Ahlquist has not been nearly as supportive in this campaign of whatever version of Medicaid expansion or whatever term you want to apply to that. He has not been as supportive. So it's not as big a surprise as it might appear on the surface.
Yeah, and he did cite Medicaid expansion. It was just, I'm against Medicaid expansion. This group has supported it in the past. Why would I want their endorsement?
So why would an endorsement like this matter to a voter, to an Idaho voter? Or does it?
You know what? I think it might. I hope it would encourage them to dig a little bit deeper on their healthcare policies. I'm not trying to punt the question, but I think that it might help. You know, being like, okay, what has Brad Little done with healthcare?
Mm-hmm. And I do think that if you're an undecided voter and you are trying to decide which candidate best represents, you know, the issues you feel most strongly about, what's closest to your heart, you might look to the NRA or to Wayne Hoffman's group or to the League of Conservation Voters or whatever it is. And so it certainly doesn't hurt. It's been interesting to watch the endorsement battle in the Democratic primary for that race, because in this case it's almost like I didn't ask for, I didn't want them on the part of Paula Jordan. And so you have a whole different dynamic on that race, which we may not want to get into because we don't have enough time. But so I think it helps if you are somebody who's undecided and want help.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of healthcare, let's talk a little bit about Labrador and Medicaid and where we are with that issue. Bill, you want to start?
Sure. The Medicaid for Idaho campaign looks like they are poised to qualify this initiative for the ballot, which would ask voters in November to decide on whether they want full-blown Medicaid expansion in Idaho. It's been a fascinating campaign to watch. It kind of came out of nowhere, and it looks like they're going to do it. So I think we're about to see Act Two of what is really an interesting drama, and it's going to be the battle over that. Now it's just not a matter of can you get the signatures. Now it's a matter of what are the merits. And you've already seen Raul Labrador just this week. Betsy reported that he said as governor he might consider supporting the legislature in possibly overturning Medicaid expansion if that's what the voters decide in November. So I think Kevin especially is familiar with what happens when the legislature doesn't agree with what the voters decide at the ballot box.
And Kevin, talk a little bit about that, because we've heard from voters who say, like, a governor can't do something like that.
You know, there's a checkered history between the legislature and the initiative process. You know, you can cite initiatives that were passed that are in place today that have really changed Idaho, the creation of a Fish and Game Commission, the Sunshine Laws. Those happened through initiative. But you can also point to, in the late 70s, the 1% initiative on property taxes. The legislature gutted that and, you know, turned it into sort of a Frankenstein's monster that has kind of changed the way local governments put budgets together for the better part of 40 years. The term limits issue was one that was very contentious between the voter initiatives and the groups pushing for term limits and legislature resisting that, and then Governor Kempthorne siding with the voters. And if I'm remembering my history, and Bill is nodding, so I think I am, he vetoed a bill to overturn the term limits that, you know, has passed by the legislature. So this does happen. But what's different here is you've got a candidate for governor saying, if I'm elected, I might override or support overriding a decision that happens on the same election ballot. So that's interesting. I don't recall seeing that happen.
It's very interesting. I want to get to a listener comment. Kendra just emailed us wanting to know, how come Democratic candidates for governor have fallen by the wayside?
They haven't. I think this is the first time we've got an interesting gubernatorial candidate on the Democratic side in years.
And in fact, there was a movement among Democrats earlier to recruit their members to go over and vote on the other side to try to skew the Republican primary. And I think that has stopped because the Democrats have a real race on their hands. So the candidates are not as prominent and as newsworthy.
Yeah,
which is part of the issue.
I would argue that you know, we are seeing plenty of Blue Cuff ads on TV right now. Paula Jordan has been getting national press on this issue, as well as a ton of local issues between the differences actually having a gubernatorial primary. So it's true that, you know, Republican candidates are going to get a lot of airtime because we are in a Republican-dominant state, mm-hmm. and that's just the reality of the game.
But is it because we have two candidates who are well-known? Does that make it for a more interesting Democratic race? Because we normally talk about the Republican candidates, to be frank.
It's definitely a more interesting race than we've seen. And speaking of debates, the Democratic candidates had their debates Sunday night. You had a difference of opinion about legalization of marijuana. That was probably the sharpest disagreement mm-hmm. on issues. But I don't know you would be having that debate on that kind of a stage if not for this contested primary.
And how did they come down on that issue?
Paula Jordan is strongly in favor of legalization of marijuana to help patients.
Right.
I think it was legalization all out to the point of recreational and medicinal, partly to help patients and help them have access to marijuana. But she also said this could be a revenue source for the state to help fund education. Mm. So I'd have to go back and listen, but I think
population.
She was all for legalization even for recreational purposes.
I thought it was decriminalization
on the other side.
Right. But
Polukoff was very skeptical about
it. But either way,
yes.
Polukoff was almost like very hesitant to even weigh in on the topic, immediately switched to the opiate crisis here in Idaho. Said, I don't really know. The FDA hasn't come out in favor of saying this is appropriate, alternative use. So very interesting differences between the two candidates there.
We are continuing our conversation with our reporter roundtable. Kimberly Krusey with the AP Idaho is with us, Idaho Education News reporter Kevin Richard, and Idaho Statesman Community Engagement Editor Bill Manny. You guys have long titles. So then let's talk about where we are come November. So it's an interesting Democratic race right now. What does it look like after May 15th?
Gosh, that's a hard question. What you have are primaries that matter, and that is going to raise, that's going to elevate the stakes in November. And I think the wild card is Trump, right? And is there any possible blue wave? Obviously, in the Republican primary, it's all about who is most aligned with Donald Trump. In the fall, that's going to be a slightly different dynamic. But I do think that the fact that you've had this pretty energetic Democratic primary raises the stakes and raises the attention in the November race.
And if the Medicaid expansion folks get it on the ballot, I think that we will see interesting people come out also. If it's on the ballot, I think that could be a huge motivation to get out and for voters to get out to the polls.
The one other thing that struck me, I was thinking about this the other day, is when you think about that Democratic caucus in 2016 and how the Bernie Sanders people turned out those mm-hmm. those really liberal Democrats in Idaho in a way that's kind of surprised everybody. And so if you have a candidate like Paulette Jordan who could motivate that base in a way we haven't seen in the past, that might change the dynamic of that race. Can a Democrat of any stripe win statewide race in Idaho? I think that's the big question, and I don't think right now that anybody would bet against the Republican.
Yeah. I think if you handicap the gubernatorial race in November, I think it really does depend to some degree on who comes out in the Republican side. I would give a Democratic nominee, whichever candidate comes out of that primary, a slightly better chance against a Raul Labrador, because Labrador is a much more polarizing and a much more conservative candidate than, say, a Brad Little. But, I think we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves
here. And I've got to wrap this up. I want to thank all three of you for coming in. So thank you.